Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the AnimeBuoy.org, Anime Fan Podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for anime recommendations, news bits, and discussion that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yar!
Today is January 18th, 2016, and this is Episode 7, Mind Game. Welcome, our lovely and beautiful listeners, to the Anime Buoy Recommendation and Discussion Podcast, where we like to talk about our favorite anime and hope to open your eyes to some classics that you might have missed and shine a light on some modern shows that maybe aren't getting as much love as we feel maybe they should be. So this week we're going to talk about the well-loved cult classic Mind Game. So buckle in and let's do this thing. Slaggy, you watched Mind Game just prior to recording this episode, yeah?
Yes.
So let's start off this discussion because, you know, Mind Game is a very strange film. It's part of why it built up that cult reputation. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your initial impressions of the film?
Yeah, it's definitely experimental. I mean, one of the things that's really apparent from the start is that, I mean, at least earlier on in the film, there's like a blend of a lot of different animation styles. There's like cutouts of photos and stuff. So it's like just very like, it contributes to like a surreal environment. And then
absolutely
the bulk of the film, I mean, there was a little bit less of that, but it's just very surreal.
Well, it almost takes on like a mixed media appearance that is really, to me, very edgy and very interesting. Even now, you know, this film is 12 years old, but it still seems like very fresh.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely not, you know, your traditional polished anime characters. The lines are like usually very sketchy. The you know, the animation, like the, I don't want to say the animation's not high quality, because it is, but it's just, it chooses to do something different, I guess. You know.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually, I mean, it's extremely well executed for what it is. But, you know, they definitely made a conscious choice for an almost like a more primitive art style.
Right.
You know, I was actually, when I watched it the first time, I was sort of like, man, you know, some of this art legit looks like it was generated in MS Paint.
But,
you know, the animation is all super smooth. It's just, you know, it's a stylistic choice to convey these ideas this way. And to me, it was one that connected more often than landed flat.
I agree.
So Mind Game was produced in 2004. It's based on mangaka Robin Nishi's manga of the same name. It was planned, produced, and primarily animated by Studio 4C. You might be familiar with their work, for example, in the 1995 film Memories by Katsuhiro Otomo-san, which, you know, we've talked about here on the show before. I don't know. We didn't do a Memories episode yet, did we?
No, we have not done Memories, Bowie.
Okay, that's gonna get done. But, so, you know, they've worked on that, which is like a landmark anime film. They worked on 2006 Tekken King Crete, the 2005 Steam Boy movie, those Berserk Golden Age arc films from the early 2010s. Slaggy, there were a couple of games you mentioned they had done before the show.
Yeah, they've actually done some work on Ostra's Wrath, Catherine, just very random, not random, but like a very wide variety of stuff. Rogue Galaxy.
Oh, nice.
Jeanne d'Arc, the PSP game about Joan of Arc.
Oh, fantastic. I also see Dot Hack on this list.
Dot Hack Link, apparently.
Excellent.
And Shin Megami Tensei Crossfire Emblem, whatever.
Gene Ibunroku Crossfire Emblem?
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. So, you know, obviously we're dealing with a real class act of a studio. They had previously done also some of the Kid Icarus short films that were available on the 3DS for a while. So, you know, definitely the kind of studio that does a lot of work that's near and dear to our hearts.
Yeah, they were involved a lot in the Animatrix, the Anime Matrix compilation.
And interestingly, you know, they also did some work on the Halo anime project, Halo Legends, I think it was called. So, yeah, definitely a studio that does a lot of work in the fields that we're
and
interested
then with, like,
in.
Music videos for Ayumi Hamasaki, Hikaru Utada, so just very wide variety. You know, a lot of these studios we look at are just like anime, but I mean, they've done commercials, games. And
oh yeah, the Utada Hikaru song they did is Passion.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That was a great video, too. The film itself was also directed by Masaki Yuasa-san. You might be familiar with him. In 2014, he adapted Ping Pong, which...
Ping Pong, Ping Pong.
That was actually a very well-loved TV series, though. That adaptation was really well done and really well-liked and well-regarded. He did direction on an episode of Space Dandy. He directed an episode of Adventure Time. He's also done Genius Party, which was a big deal back in 2008. Kimo no Zume, which is a fantastic kind of horrific, like, comedy series he did direction work on for, like, series director role. So, you know, he's done a lot of work that is really very highly regarded. As far as I'm aware, he has not worked on a ton of movies, but Mind Game, you know, it does not play like an amateur piece. Like, it really feels like someone who is in control of sort of creating this kind of story and storytelling. So, Sagi, did you have anything else to say about the production before we dig into the music?
Well, let's move on.
Well, one of the other big names that I sort of held off on mentioning is that the film's music was handled by Shinichiro Watanabe-san.
Oh, huh. Well,
yeah. I feel like we've talked about Watanabe-san a lot here on the show already. You're probably most familiar with his work from shows like Cowboy Bebop, Samurai Champloo, Macross Plus, Kids on the Slope, Space Dandy. So, you know, he's done...
Oh, you know, just so basically someone who's... to whom music isn't really that important.
Well, and you know, in doing the music production for this film, he worked with Seiichi Yamamoto-san, whom it just has an absolutely insane resume. He's been in a ton of just huge Japanese bands, including the noise rock outfit The Boredoms, which were, you know, a big deal a while back. So he also, for the piano pieces on the film, worked with Yoko Kanno, which is another name that pops up on the show a lot.
Oh, yeah, just a little known creative talent in the industry.
Excellent. So now this film, and before we really talk about the film itself, I just want to point out, you know, this is a film that has been called a favorite by such directors as Satoshi Kon and Bill Plimpton, you know, people who within the field of animation are really very, very highly regarded. It won quite a few awards worldwide, despite only recently having had its first worldwide release. Supposedly, there was some discussion some number of years back when Tekken King Crete released back in 2006. It was licensed for North American release by Sony Pictures, and there was apparently discussion at the time of licensing Mind Game for a worldwide release, but unfortunately plans fell through, and it was never officially released here until just this past September, that's September of 2015. It was put up on Netflix on September 2nd. The reason for that, of course, is, you know, Netflix is building its worldwide network, and they finally got a Netflix Japan in place. And in doing so, they signed the necessary contracts to bring Studio 4C on board for, you know, the films that they had made, they still owned rights to, and to produce them for a worldwide audience. So that definitely works out for all of our best favor. And I think it's really, really cool of Netflix to be, you know, sort of aggressively pursuing content like this.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So definitely very exciting stuff. The subtitle track that is used on Netflix, as I understand it, is actually present on the original Japanese release of Mind Game. So if you are one of those people who really likes a physical release, my best recommendation would probably be to find that R2 DVD.
That makes sense, yeah.
So with all of that having been said, let's talk about the film itself. And Sagi, where you could be really helpful here is if you could give me as few spoilers as possible, just a little like introduction to the film and as far as its story. What is it about? Give me a little synopsis.
Okay, so there's this guy who is presumably meant to be not a Mary Sue, but you know, like the kind of stand-in for the author of
an author insert?
Yes, because his name is Nishi, and you know, Robin Nishi is the mangaka who created the original manga. So, it's about this guy, Nishi. He's kind of dorky and awkward. He wants to be a successful mangaka when he grows up, and he has this random encounter, not like a salacious one necessarily, but you know, randomly runs into this girl that he grew up with on the subway, and she was kind of like, seemed to be on the run almost. And so basically, Something happens, and Nishi gets a second chance to go back and change the thing that happened. And so it starts to get pretty surreal. And then in this reality, he kind of, seizes the opportunity to, you know, like, just live his life to the fullest. So.
Excellent. Well done. You know, when you say it that way, it sounds like a fairly straightforward and sort of real-world story. Do you think
that's... no spoilers.
Do you think that's an accurate statement?
I mean, you told me not to give any spoilers.
All right, so, you know, that's our setup. Where do things get fantastic?
I mean, how spoilery am I going to get now?
You can get a little spoilery.
Well, I mean, like, after God sends Nishi back so that he can, change the course of not getting shot inside of the butt with a gun?
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly what I wanted you to talk about.
Yeah, and I guess we should probably say right now that there is a scene that, you know, at this kind of critical moment in the film that, you know, the content of which may be difficult for some people. There is an attempted rape. So,
yeah, you know, there is definitely some triggering... potentially triggering content here.
And at first I was kind of like, I don't really know if I want to keep watching this. But then it actually, you know, from that point, you know, actually ended up being quite a roller coaster ride of a movie. So.
Well, and you know, there was the attempted assault. And, you know, certainly that is unfortunate, but the film definitely does give the female characters a sense of agency. I didn't really feel like this character existed only for that scene to happen. And, you know, again, the way that scene played, I could have left this film if it had played differently, but the way it did play, fortunately does not cross a line for me personally.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, it's almost hard to talk about this movie without getting fairly spoilery.
Yeah, I mean, there's kind of like a Yakuza subplot, kind of running throughout.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But you know, one of the things we do talk about here on the show is that we typically do discuss the themes of a piece, and so I would like to discuss the themes of Mind Game, because I actually think there's a lot going on here, and it's ultimately a film that I felt did have a lot to say, as opposed to most, like, hyper-kinetic, super-energy anime films that look really pretty but maybe don't have a lot to say. I felt like Mind Game did. And so I'd like to talk about that a little bit. So, Saiki, what did you think ultimately was the point?
Oh, I mean, I think to kind of call back to when they're in the one part where they spend most of the movie with the old man, not to be any more spoilery, and they're kind of like, you know, there's fantasy sequences, but then also, like, you know, Nishi is drawing manga, and he's starting to have, like, romance with Myon, who is, you know, his childhood friend. Myon's sister is kind of like, she's like, ooh, I'm gonna cut my hair and live my life and do some crazy artistic dancing and be fabulous. You know, they're kind of, like, just going after their dreams, you know?
Well, and that's, so our characters all end up captive in a setting for the majority of the film. And, you know, what you're talking about, Saiki, and I want to build on this because to me it was the most important and I thought a really affecting thing that the film had to say was sort of, you know, that to some degree we all are sort of responsible for our own realizations of ourselves. And in the film, that's contextualized by removing all of these characters from the situations that had previously dictated their behavior and basically giving them a world where they are owed nothing, but they owe nothing, and they're free to explore themselves and explore who they want to be, and in the case of Myon and Nishi, who they want to be with. And to me, you know, is really impacting because that ultimately is what gave the characters the strength to go back into the outside world and bring these realized versions of themselves into the outside world.
Yeah.
And so to me, I again, you know, I thought it was really cool that this film with a lot of fantastical elements was ultimately just, you know, a very, very much almost like a character study about these characters and what their motivations really were. But, you know, we also had a lot of visual symbolism involving death and rebirth. No end of Evangelion, but, you know, death and rebirth. What did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like a whole like kind of cyclical thing without giving away how the movie ends. You know, it's very cyclical, and even the way that the final scenes of the movie are like a montage that are very, it's very similar to the way that the movie opens with a montage, but it's like a little bit expanded.
Oh yeah, and we as viewers now have context for all of the imagery that it's showing us. So.
Yes.
I really felt like that was a very effective callback and use of scene. But I'm sorry, continue.
I know, so I was just saying, like, you know, like, it's very cyclical and, you know, I would guess kind of the fate of the characters is constantly called into question, particularly for Nishi, you know, who's, like, kind of in limbo at various points in the film.
Yeah, and, you know, it sort of goes hand in hand with the idea of self-realization and everything, but I also felt to some degree that the film also sort of tries to deal with the idea that we have like a fated place we're supposed to end up. And I felt like the film also touched on the idea that, you know, the only place we're really supposed to end up is where we decide we want to end up and where we're willing to work toward.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, I really felt like this movie, it, not in like a gross bootstraps way, was very much about, you know, the power of determination and working hard to get where you want to be being gross about it.
Yeah, I mean, even when they finally escape the place they're trapped, they, you know, they're just like, okay, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. And then it gets, like, super, like, fantastical. Like, oh, we're running on airplanes now. But, you know, I mean, even at that point, you know, I think the only thing that's really different is that they're determined to get out.
Well, exactly. And, you know, I took that as symbolic of the idea of, like, the world trying to prevent them from escape. And, you know, ultimately, they just had to give it everything and go as hard as they could. Which, you know, again, as a theme, that's something that I like. I like this idea being communicated this way.
Agreed.
So overall, Slaggy, what did you think in full? What is sort of your reaction to the movie?
I surprisingly enjoyed it. Like I said, I really wasn't sure at first, but I think now knowing where it ended up and after that, you know, one scene that was problematic and perhaps could have been done differently. I don't know if that scene was necessary to serve the story exactly the way that it played out, but that being said, you know, I think it, I can see why, you know, definitely like Satoshi Kon, for example, I can see why he, had praised it. You know, it's very, there's very much like surreal, and it's just, I think any time we get a chance to see, any sort of animation that dares to be different, but especially in anime where, you know, a lot of us who originally sought out anime were like, oh, it's because it's different. You know, it tells different stories. It, you know, can be more serious and more adult, not adult, like, you know, sexy, but, you know, like more mature themes and, stories than we're used to in Western animation or, you know, had been. So even to that degree, you know, we're seeing something that's even different within the realm of Japanese animation, you know, not, like I said, very like polished character design, you know. So I think it's good to have these sorts of, even if there are some problems with, you know, at least that one scene or a couple of parts of the movie, you know, it's valuable for the art form, I think, to have pieces like this.
Absolutely. And following up on that, then, is this something you would recommend people watch?
I think, again, kind of like we talked about before, you know, just if, as long as, you know, that theme is, I mean, I'm not going to say that like anyone needs to like get over it, you know, I'm just saying like if that theme or that, you know, that's the aspect of that scene, the attempted assault, if that is something that you're able to go into it knowing if that's going to be, you know, potentially triggering, that would be my only block of recommending it. Is basically what I'm saying.
Okay, so to see if I follow you correctly, you would recommend it to anyone that can handle the R word scene.
Yeah, I mean, I would never say that anyone who, you know, that's very sensitive to and, you know, could bring up upsetting, you know, memories or whatsoever, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
I would never recommend them to, you know, watch something that's going to affect their mental states as such. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I want to just, you know, be clear when I said anyone whom won't be bothered by that, there's nothing wrong with being unable to watch certain kinds of media due to certain scenes. You know, I know some parents who can't watch horror movies where children are, you know, the victims. And I don't think that's, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. If you can't handle media with depictions of this disgusting act, I certainly can't blame you. And, you know, we're going to have to make it a point next episode to talk about a feature that doesn't feature that.
Yes, let's please do that.
All right, well, so I think, again, you know, with the caveat that it does have potentially triggering material, otherwise I would call Mind Game a must-watch. I think that sort of an impressionistic take on anime narrative is super interesting for the art form, like Slaggy was saying. This is considered a very influential film in the realm of 2D animation, and I think it's an absolute must-watch. I'm super happy that Netflix has made it available to North American viewers, and I hope all of you out there enjoy it too.
Yeah.
With all that having been said, let's move on.
All right.
So this week, I have been watching Dragon Ball Super, which, you know, is fantastic. It unfortunately remains unlicensed in North America. I do not understand that at all, frankly. But I've also been watching a new anime series. It's called Erased. It is simulcasting on Crunchyroll. The first two episodes are up now. And so far, it's really good. It's one of the big series that people are talking about this current anime season, and I would definitely rank it like an A+. I'm super enjoying it, and I get the feeling it's one that we'll be talking about here on the show a few months from now.
That's great.
Slaggy, what have you been watching?
Well, I, too, have been keeping up with Dragon Ball Super. You know, it just finished up the series representation of the Resurrection of F movie. So, just like as with the Battle of Gods movie, I thought both were great adaptations. I'm excited to see finally some brand new content aside from that one filler episode, which was actually a puppy episode if you think about it. That one episode was a puppy episode in some ways.
Oh my gosh!
Otherwise, I actually have been watching Sailor Moon S, which actually is Sailor Moon Super, so I've been watching some Super things. You know, so my history with Sailor Moon is that, you know, I watched it when it was dubbed over here by Deke, you know, not very well liked dub, but, you know, as I mentioned back in our first episode, you know, it did managed to spark my interest in anime. So, you know, me and Sailor Moon go way back. And so I actually had never seen any of the content after Sailor Moon R because they, at that point, they had, you know, stopped broadcasting it on UPN or whatever. It was syndicated or whatever. And then eventually another company took over the dubbing and, Toonami was airing it a little bit, but I was, past watching it by then. But, I'm really liking it. It's still very Monster of the Week, which is, you know, I think all of Sailor Moon, up to at least the point that I've seen, is pretty Monster of the Week for a lot of it. Almost in the style of like a Sentai show in a way, which is, you know, very different to anyone who's only familiar with Sailor Moon through Crystal, which, you know, is a lot faster paced, is, you know, gets through this, hits the story beats a lot faster. But even with that caveat, I'm really enjoying it. Finally seeing, Sailor Uranus and Sailor Neptune being super fierce. And, yeah, so I'm.
And they're the same sex lovers, right?
They are the same sex lovers. Although there's some interesting things explored with that. And, yeah, it's just, it really is cool to see that, you know, this would have been maybe 94 when Super was airing. And I mean, just the fact that it was like, oh, yeah, lesbians on a super popular show. Like, I mean, I think that's still groundbreaking to think about. So, and I mean, I love cartoon lesbians, so.
All right. Well, very good. So I think that is just about.
Oh, wait. Oh, wait. There's one more thing. Because I realized it's been a while. I also had finally gotten back to and finished watching Dramatical Murder, which is based on the erotic BL visual novel. Of course, it's, you know, not quite erotic in the anime, but, you know, I could have probably gone with like a couple more episodes. I think it kind of wrapped up too quickly, but I actually thought it was pretty decent. You know, there were some things kind of like, oh, well, I expected this element to play into it more, but, yeah, overall, I thought it was pretty good. If you're looking for something gay and sci-fi, I mean, you know, it hits those beats. It's still pretty gay, so.
Excellent. You know, I think that there probably are a lot of people looking for, you know, some queer content in the anime world. So, you know, it's exciting that, you know, there's a new entry in that field. Newer entry in that field.
Yeah.
So excellent. Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, then let's start wrapping this up.
All right. Well, I've got a few tweets I want to catch up on over at GameBooie. Oh, oops. At animebooie.org with the .org spelled out .dot.org.
Animebooie.org with the .org spelled out .dot.org.
Spoilers, we do another show. First, we have a tweet from Emiru69, who is saying, another great episode of GameBooey.org and AnimeBooey.org. Seriously, how do I manage to do laundry before these guys? That tweet seems familiar, maybe because we read it on GameBooey, but aw, still sweet. And then we have two tweets from Dan Diaz, who is a GameBooey super fan, and was very happy that we did Cowboy Bebop is one of our early episodes, so I guess these are all early episodes. He said, you said to recommend some anime, but I doubt I've seen anything you haven't, so I'll phrase it like this. What are your feelings, if any, on Darker Than Black?
Darker Than Black is something that I was watching and gave up on. I was super enjoying it, but it came out at a time when I was watching too many series. Because of this tweet, I'm actually going to have to get back to it. So let me answer that again a few weeks from now.
Yeah, that was kind of back in that, later of the end of last decade, right? Where just a bunch of stuff was coming, was starting to come out.
Yeah, that was from like 2007, maybe. There was a lot going on back then, but it did, you know, have music from Yoko Kanno, and I was enjoying it, so it's definitely something I'd like to get back to.
You know, a fun little tie-in that I realized when I was reading about Memories, which is why I was like, oh my, Tensai Okamura-san, who is the person behind Darker Than Black, did a segment for Memories, which also had, Koji Morimoto-san and Satoshi Kon. So, you know, kind of tying it all back together.
That's awesome. Well, all right on that then. Was there anything else?
Nope.
All right. Well, then, you want to hit me with those solicitations?
Yes, we love your feedback.
Love
it.
We
like it. Your iTunes subscriptions, ratings, and reviews.
Like
we like when you go stitch it up with us on Stitcher Radio.
Stitch.
And we've got Facebook. We've got Twitter.
We love Twitter.
You can email us at mailbooey@animebooey.org.
mailbooey@animebooey.org.
And our home base is animebooey.org.
Animebooey.org. All right, well, let me do my shout-outs. As ever and always, the first show you should check out is GameBooey.org.
GameBooey.org.
GameBooey.org is the twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'd also like to point you in the direction of the Starboard Power Coupling podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. And last, but certainly not least, I'd like to point you in the direction of the new podcast that I appear on. This is Ranger Pride Podcast.
Hey.
A weekly podcast devoted to Power Rangers and Super Sentai, hosted by Shane Alenko and Spike Point.
Excellent.
You can check out Ranger Pride. Our Twitter, which is kind of our main base for right now, is Ranger Pridecast. So listen to the show, hop on, and you know, if you're into what we talk about here on Anime Buoy, you might be into what we're talking about on Ranger Pride.
Yeah, definitely. I've never been a huge, not saying I'm not a huge fan, but I've never had a lot of experience with Super Sentai, but you know, Captain Spike and Shane Alenko are both experienced podcasters, so you know, definitely a polished thing they got going on there. So
aw, thanks.
And if you want something that's not polished, but just sassy and gay, then you should check out, hopefully coming soon. I mean, we've got an announcement coming up of casting, reveals and such.
Look, the cast reveal is February 1st. We've got to do, like, a preview episode shortly thereafter, right?
No, that's what I'm saying. So, I'm, of course, talking about Radiance Fundamental, which is where Spike, myself, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from Video Game Realness talk about the currently airing season of RuPaul's Drag Race. You know, it's currently gearing back up because we're in for some announcements soon, and apparently All-Stars this year, so it should be a busy year for us. You know, we've kind of taken the revealed seasons off, just trying to, you know, focus on our primary podcast, but looking forward to that. If you are a fan of wrestling, I'd like to direct you in the direction of Tables, Ladders, and Podcasts, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man.
Excellent. All right. Is that it, or do we have anything else?
GameBooey.org.
GameBooey.org. All right. Well, you know, thank you for spending this lovely Monday afternoon with us. I hope you have enjoyed listening to us even half as much as we have enjoyed talking to you guys. You know, I want to just make a quick note. We do recognize, you know, for being a twice-monthly show, we sure have had a whole lot of once-monthly episodes, you know, over the last few months. That changes here. So please join us as we get this ball back on track and start talking with you about some of our real favorite golden oldies. However, until then, keep watching, keep thinking, and see you, Space Cowboy?
I guess so.
Mics are hot.
Ow.